Species.
Unite.
Species. Unite.
It made me feel like I wish that I had some sort of a superhero power that I could have just picked them up and taken them somewhere safe. But unfortunately, I'm not strong enough to have done that. So what I did was decided that 11 years old, I was going to commit my life to safeguarding the species, and I'll do everything in my power.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. For the month of August, we are asking you to join us in our mission to change the way that the world treats animals and become a member of Species Unite. The benefits of joining are pretty awesome. For a monthly donation of any size, even $2, you will receive access to exclusive content, outtakes, bonus podcast episodes, updates, and newsletters, priority access to all Species Unite events, and a welcome pack from yours truly. So go to our website, speciesunite.com, and click Become a Member. This conversation is with Jamal Galvez, otherwise known as the Manatee Man. Jamal grew up in a small village in Belize, a village that's famous for its manatee population. And when he was 11 years old, he saw a research boat, got curious, and asked if he could tag along. For some reason, they let him, and they let him come back all the time for the next 5 years, until finally, when he was 16, they gave him a job. Now, 20 years later, he is the program coordinator for the Belize Manatee Conservation Program at the Clearwater Marine Aquarium Research Institute. He sees it as his life's mission to protect and save these gentle giants. When I first learned about you, I was like just in awe of all that you've done and your story. And also, I know so little about manatees that it made me all the more interested. I'm really excited to have you. So thank you.
I'm glad to be a part. Glad to share as best as I can.
Let's go back to when you were a kid and how all this started, because it's a pretty crazy, incredible story. Will you talk about where you grew up and manatees in your life and what you thought about them then and how that shifted?
So as a kid, I grew up in a very small coastal community named Gill's Point, Manatee, famous and known for the manatee's presence there. As a kid, seeing a manatee was like seeing a bird or a duck or some just normal animal that you see on a daily basis. It wasn't a big deal for me. It wasn't something that is astonishing because I've grown up seeing them my entire life. My grandma lives underwater, so we'd often see them right just offshore, swimming along, feeding along. We'd often see them on the boats as I go to my grandfather. He'd point them out to us. But at the age 11, what really sparked my interest was seeing this weird-looking boat drives by with the engine in the front. It's a high tower. It's kind of like something I've never seen before. And on the boat, it says Manatee Research. So as a kid, I started to question what these guys were doing, and I eventually learned that they were doing manatee research within my community. They're studying the species to try and develop a conservation action to safeguard the species. So I strolled down to the dock where they live, where I actually met Dr. James Buddy Powell, who is actually my boss today still. I approached him as an 11-year-old kid, and I said, Dr. Powell, I said, I'd like to come up with you guys. And he looked at me, shrugged for a second, and this small 11-year-old skinny kid. And he was like, ah, kid, you're too small. I understand what he meant, as it's not a place for a small kid. You're dealing with a large species, nets. It can be dangerous for a kid. You can be in the way most of the time. But I'm pretty sure it was my I'm about to cry face that made him change his mind and say, ah, kid, let's go. I did not even ask my grandma's permission, which had some consequences.
What do you think made him say yes?
I think he saw a lot of himself in me after hearing his story. He was that kid too that saw Daniel Hartman working in Crystal River, trying to study the species, not knowing the area. and saw a little kid on the boat that knows the area and got to tag along. So I think he may have saw a bit of himself in me, just as this curious little kid wanting to be a part of the team, wanting to learn, wanting to just be out there on the boat. It could have been that that may have played on his heart and his decision to say, you know what, let's go, kid. And that's where my journey began, being the Manatee's best friend. I got on the boat.
What they have you doing on the boat?
I'm taking blood samples, genetic samples, looking at their breath rate, heart rate, looking for disease, anything that could provide some important information to them that would help to safeguard the species. Perhaps we'll find that there's trace elements in Manatee's blood there. Perhaps we're recognizing that boat's an issue. It's really an important expedition, really an important research expedition that helps researchers. It helps us to lobby government, to lobby for better protection for the species, whether it means enforcing or designating no-wake zones or establishing wildlife sanctuaries or protected areas. So it is really an important part of our work. It is really the proof that we need to substantiate our decisions and why these species are needed to be protected.
You kept going back to the boat like year after year?
They would come twice a year in the wet season and the dry season. After the first year of me being there, I can remember very clearly the day out, being out on the boat with these guys. I was so fascinated seeing a manatee out of the water. I've never seen a manatee out of the water. I was so excited, never seen how large they actually are. And what stunned me was that this large giant just lay there gently. And that really resonated with the name, Gentle Giants, as they refer to them as Gentle Giants. But what I did as an 11-year-old kid was, first I just stood back and I basically memorized the entire process. I knew when they're going to take blood. I knew when they're going to do ultrasound. I knew when they're going to do every single procedure. I memorized it in my head. I got home that evening. I'm not sure if it was my fascination with manatees that made me not able to sleep. I got up at about 4 o'clock in the morning taking a shower. My grandma's like, who's in there taking a shower? I'm like, me, grandma. Why are you taking a shower at this hour? I'm like, I'm going to go help do manatee research. And she's like, they don't leave until 9 o'clock. Go to your bed. Nonetheless, I got there around somewhere about 5:36. And Dr. Paul was sitting there with his dark sunglasses drinking coffee. And I remembered what equipment goes on what boats. So this little kid, struggling with these bins of equipment, loading them onto the boats. And he just sits and look at me, probably wondering, what the hell is this darn kid doing? When the crew got there, the equipments were already loaded. Nobody asked no question. They just got on the boat and leave. So after memorizing the first day, before they could have said, get me the medical kit, I already got the medical kit. Before they could have said, get me the tape measure, I already got it because I knew the entire process. I memorized the entire process. It's just me trying to be a part of the team, me wanting to feel relevant, to feel like I'm doing something, I'm holding something, I'm actually important to the team. But nobody really, in my mind at that time, nobody really recognized my effort. They would, in a sense, I was trying to impress Dr. Powell. I wanted to look at me and say, look at this kid, look at this kid. But he was so busy with everything else that I didn't think that he noticed me at the time. So every year I said, you know what, I'm not going to go back because they don't appreciate me. They don't see me. I'm just this little kid that's in the way. But nonetheless, I'm there every year. But what kept me coming was that these doctors really took the time to teach me different things. I went from literally standing in the corner to holding the tape measure, to passing equipment, to eventually recording breaths, to eventually learning how to take stuff such as heart rates, blood, all these more important activities that they're doing on the species. I was actually taught how to do that. But what really kept me there was learning that the manatees are endangered, learning that they're in trouble, learning that somebody needs to do something to save them. It made me feel like I wish that I had some sort of a superhero power that I could have just picked them up and take them somewhere safe. But unfortunately, I'm not strong enough to have done that. So what I did was decided that I was going to commit my life to safeguarding the species, and I would do everything in my power as an 11-year-old to make sure that the next generation are able to actually go out on a boat and see these animals in their wild habitat, see their natural behavior, to be able to have manatee mothers and calf be safe, to have calf grown up into becoming adult, and for them to be here for a long time.
Did that happen pretty quickly, that you went from kind of manatees just being normal and around you, and then you're on the research boat, and then all of a sudden you realize, wait, this is why I'm, like, this is my life's mission?
Yeah, it sort of caught me off guard. As a kid, I always thought that I wanted to be a lawyer, an attorney. I felt that that was what I wanted to do, but destiny had different plans for me. It was really like being on the boat and seeing these men and this with boat scars, not being able to understand how they got them, and not being able to understand them, the meaning of endangered, once those terms were explained to me, I really sort of like grasped and understood that, you know what, this animal can actually not be here tomorrow. And after reflecting and seeing these animals for my entire life, to think that I can get up tomorrow morning and they're not going to be there, I feel that somebody had to do something about it, and why not me? Why can't I be that someone? So I volunteered from 11 years old until I was 16 years old, when Dr. Powell then and Nicola Will Gomez offered me a job as a field assistant. It was probably one of the most exciting days of my life, because all I wanted to do was work in Manantis, and the opportunity was there now. So when they offered it to me, I was like, don't joke around, my heart's racing, my blood pressure going high. Are you serious? And they're like basically saying that seems like we cannot get rid of you, so we might as well hire you. And so I've literally worked my way up from the field assistant. I run the entire program for the entire country of Belize.
How incredible. Did the manatees themselves, did they go from kind of being just all the same to you started seeing individuals?
Yeah, most definitely. It sort of changed me as a kid. See, manatees, it's kind of like your brain isn't developed enough to really grasp the magnitude of the situation these animals are living in and to really understand their lifestyle. I reflect back and think to myself, I must have been crazy to be 11 year old and want to save an endangered species, because it is a big job. It is a huge job. I guess I did not see it in its more literal sense.
Before we talk about what's actually happening to them and why there are less and less in most places, will you talk about them specifically for a minute and just tell us a little about them?
I mean, you'd be shocked. There's a story I can tell you about each animal that I've interacted with. It's astonishing to me that how much we have so much in common, especially when it relates to a mother and a calf bonding. It's similar to humans, how a mother feeds and takes care of their baby with love and with care. That's just the way they are. So when I see an orphan calf and I see a mother being killed by a boat, I resonate that to a human being. So to look at it as a young child, being put in an orphanage, being moved from foster home to foster home, being raised by people that he or she do not know and may not understand his or her trials or tribulations, and basically eventually put out there into the world to survive. It's not an easy thing to do, and it's a hard thing for even manatees to do. What we've managed to have taken from these animals, we can't possibly give or replace in no way, shape, or form. It's just a minor gesture of saying, you know what, we're trying to help you. What we've taken from them, no matter how much money you had, no matter how much conservation actions you've taken, no matter how much talks I've done, no matter how much kids have inspired, it's just a small gesture compared to what we have taken from them. We can't actually give to them what they truly deserve.
It happens more and more that there's orphans, right? Mothers are being killed.
We're definitely seeing more orphan and more rescues than we've normally seen in the past years.
I saw a few videos of you rescuing orphans, which are unbelievable to watch. But so when you rescue orphans, how do you even know they're there? How does that happen?
A lot of our effort is dependent on the public. Hence the reason I try my best to make manatees famous, because people like things that are famous. If people become aware of what a manatee is and who to call, what to do, it makes my job easier, because it means that we have another few more eyes looking out for these species. So normally what would happen is that people that are living along the coast, boat captains, fishermen, would normally observe an injured or a dead manatee, and they would call it into our hotline. And that's when we are going to respond to the report.
Take us through the process. So then there's an orphan and you get it out of the water. And so then what happens?
Usually after we get the call, we respond. We don't necessarily just react to get it out of the water, because sometimes mothers will leave their calves in quiet areas as they go feed in nearby. You don't want to take a mother's calf while she's just off in a nearby area feeding. So what we do is normally hang around for about 45 minutes to an hour to observe the animal, also to look to see, to make sure that there's no other manatees in the area. Our goal is not just to quickly rescue, it's to ensure that what we can do for this animal will be better than it has in its current state. The only way we're going to react much faster if the animal is in a critical state where it's unable to come to the surface to breed, or something is hindering it from being normal and stuff like that, we'll react immediately. Once the animal is rescued, we normally would collect important information such as the sex of the animal, the weight, the length, And depending on his condition, we'd probably administer some PLA to try and rehydrate it, as usually it means that these animals are away from their mother for a couple of days. They're usually very dehydrated. So you want to rehydrate them so that they're prepared and they're more comfortable for the journey to the rehabilitation center. As it's quite a drive to the rehabilitation center. It's loaded onto a rescue truck where we have a lot of sponge to make it more comfortable. We carry water to make it wet, towels to keep its temperature. And once it gets to the rehabilitation center, it's usually put into isolation to ensure it doesn't bring something to other animals that maybe they're contaminate the rehab center. And the folks at the rehabilitation center will then take over from there, where they'll administer the necessary care until the animal is eventually ready to be released back into the wild.
How long from when you get them until they're usually released back?
Usually for a calf, it'll be around 2 to 3 years, as they have to get to a certain age, they have to get to a certain size, and they'd have to be able to show a certain behavior, meaning that it should be not too attached to human beings. It's independent, to feed on its own. It's able to swim, do things that manatees will normally do on their own before they're actually able to be released.
That must be tough for the humans to not let them get too attached when they have them for so long, right? 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, you have to be really disciplined to understand that, you know what, these animals' places in the wild. And you have to take some solace in the fact that you're putting it back where it belongs, giving it somewhat of a normal life, trying to give it somewhat of a normal life to go back and to be a manatee, not to be in a cement pool, being fed by humans. For me, I get the solace in seeing them going back into the wild and being wild and free.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of things that are threatening manatees. What are the biggest ones? The boats?
Yeah, boats is a serious concern. But when you look at things such as habitat loss, as we're seeing in Florida, significant die-off of seagrass beds that manatees have grown accustomed to feed on for many, many, many years. And manatees are like elephants. They remember where to go to feed, where to go to get fresh water. So when they show up to feed and there's no seagrass, there's no other option, there's no plan B for them, just basically sit there and die. And that's what we've been seeing in Florida. Yeah. And they've just been sitting ducks waiting to die because there's no food. So habitat destruction or loss of habitat has become a serious concern for manatees. And we in Belize are taking note to the mistakes or to the mishaps that have occurred in Florida and hope to try and do better so that we do not end up in similar situation, as our population is way smaller. We can't afford to have a 600 manatee die off, not in a year at all.
How many do you have approximately?
Well, the population here is estimated to be around 1,000, and it's the largest number throughout its range. I believe it has the highest population of the Antillean manatees in the world.
Which isn't very many, 1,000.
Exactly, 1,000. So if you can see 600 die off in Florida, that was to happen here, it'd be a serious concern.
Right. What about when you were a little kid? Like, how many were there then compared to now?
I'm pretty sure there were more. I would want to believe so. As there were less boats, there were less tourism, there were less things that are less development, there were less things that are pressuring the population. But over the last 10 years or so, we've seen significant change in our country in terms of tourism, in terms of the need for facilities, development, habitat loss, to build mega cruise ship ports and condos. So you see mangrove that being cleared away, seagrass being dredged up and taken away. And then there's such as climate change that we are not able to directly to address right away. So they're insurmountable amount of pressure that is on already fragile population that we truly believe that if our efforts is not able to keep up with the amount of pressure that has been brought on the species, we'll better prepare for the worst.
It's really depressing. So how does this turn around?
The turnaround is really inspiring change. Inspiring people to want to wake up to save a species, inspiring people to want to wake up and do something, whether it's safe boating or putting your garbage in its proper place or supporting legislation that protects and safeguards the environment, or speak up against things that are destroying the environment. We all have a role to play and we must play our role. Otherwise, we'll be in a boat that is heading for a significant nosedive.
You've been doing this for over 20 years. Has it been difficult to get people to care about manatees? I know once they learn about them, I'm sure they care about them, but so many people just don't really even understand them.
It's not an easy task to tell somebody why, to convince somebody why they should leave what they're doing to want to listen, to or to really learn and to appreciate Manantis. I have a role to play in this. I am responsible for this. Manantis give to our ecosystem. They contribute to my livelihood, contribute to our environment. We need to realize that they do play a role, and not having them there has significant impact as well. People downplay the fact that small efforts can be huge impact. I mean, I was just an 11-year-old that wanted to save a species. I had no knowledge of Manantis, no degree, no background, no nothing. All I had was I was inspired. I had persistency, dedication, and I was not going to be taken, like, turned down or told no. I was determined. That's all I had, determination and a passion to save a species. Conservation should be a lifestyle. It should be that a teacher does conservation. It should be a doctor, a priest, wherever you are, you should be a part of conservation. It's a part of life. It's not something that you go to 8 to 5. It's something that you live. And my goal is to inspire people not just to save Manantis, but to save this planet, to remember that we have enjoyed it. And it would be selfish of us to leave this planet in any less shit than we found it, so the other generation are able to enjoy it. Because I firmly believe that if we do not teach the next generation the idea of conservation and preservation, we'd better teach them survival. And this, the world as it is already tough. So imagine if we do not do the right things, it'll be so hard for the next generation to even survive on this planet.
I know you talk to everything from small kids to adults to universities, you know, across the board. But when you're talking to small kids about manatees and about conservation, do they pretty quickly catch on and you know, want to be a part of it?
They actually, they're my favorite to talk to. They make you see things in different light that you'd be basically overlooked or underappreciate. So for me, it's a learning process to me as well as I speak to kids. But why I like speaking to them, because they make me excited. They make me feel like there's this hope. That to me is what makes me feel like we still stand a chance. Makes me feel like we are still able to make it work, because they're the ones that are going to make the difference. Our job is to prepare them to make the difference. And if we don't prepare them, then we fail them. And if it's left to me, I'll make sure that every single kid in the world knows about Manantis.
What about where you grew up? I'm sure everybody knows who you are and you're pretty famous. When you were a kid, were people paying attention to manatees? And did you inspire kind of the village to change, because there's so many there?
No, most definitely. When I grew up, like I said, manatees weren't, not much was known about manatees, as there weren't a lot of social media, television. We didn't even have cable where I live. There's no internet there. There's no computers there. It's literally, the village was run on a generator. There wasn't 24 hours electricity. So literally, you're appreciating your environment. You're appreciating your surrounding. Our village is named after the species. It gives us a sense of appreciation for it naturally. So it's one of the places that I think that I consider a haven for manatees. Plenty of seagrass. There's numerous freshwater sources. And people there love manatees. That if I was a manatee, I'd go live there too. But most definitely, people in the village now have a larger appreciation for the species. They recognize it. They love it. They're very proud of the person that I have become. But I am proud of the person that they've made me become, because they all influenced my life in some way or the other. They all pushed me. They all allowed me to stand up and to speak up about a species that they represent as well. And I can just try my best to represent as best as I can and to make the story be known and heard, because it's not an easy task. But my thing is that the most important tool in conservation is literally a story. Every animal deserves a story. And by me telling you this story gets told to 20,000 people, who then tell it to another 20,000 people. And before you know it, you have a kid in Oregon wanting to save manatees that I've never seen a manatee before, that don't even know what it is. I grew up in a small coastal community where you're exposed to gangs, drugs, and but because I draw that interest in manatees, it took me away from gangs and drugs and stuff like that. So people look at me as saving manatees' life, but literally manatees saved my life first. I'm merely just doing them the favor that they've done for me. And it's something that I felt that it had to have been done. If I was a pilot, I'd still do it. If I was a doctor, I'd still do it, because it's something that I had to do. It's not an option for me. I have to do it. I will not feel that I've really lived my life fully if I'm not able to do this.
You know, I talk to a lot of people in conservation who are doing really incredible work, and at the same time feel very overwhelmed by the direction the planet is going because there's such massive devastation going on and kind of across the board. When you're out there and you're doing your work and you're bringing all this awareness and you're saving these actual individuals, do you feel like you're up against a really hard tide, or do you feel like progress is coming?
I think I'm up a huge tide, but to me, every single animal rescued is an animal that is saved. So just as I look at every man and see that die is not just a statistic, it's another one lost. It's another one that's not going to be able to contribute to being a part of the population. It goes both ways for me. But what really keeps me optimistic and keep me going is that, you know what, I have people that support me. People that depend on me to do what I do. And I know that Manantis are dependent on me to tell their story. And I can't let them down. That's not an option for me. Even though days are dark, sometimes days are hard. Sometimes I feel like I've made 10 steps forward and 50 steps backwards. I reflect back on the people that sent me these kind notes to say, you know what, thank you, I appreciate you. And people would be surprised how far just a small gesture goes. And people often ask, how can I be a part of conservation? How can I help? And helping is not always writing a check. Yes, we do need funds to do the work that we do, but it's not the only thing that you can do. Helping is literally doing your part, volunteering in a cleanup somewhere, doing something for the environment. Help is sharing a post on social media. Help is telling the story that you've been told to 5 other persons. Help is literally wanting to care about the species. No matter what you do or where you are, you can be a part. I've had a kid from Oregon sent me a letter with a dollar bill in there and said, this is my allowance, but it's not much, but I want to help Manantis. It wasn't the dollar bill that come. It's the fact that he wrote that letter, put it in the mail, and sent it all the way from Oregon to say, Jamal, I really appreciate what you do. How can I help? How can I be a part of it? That's what makes me feel like there's a possibility for change, because it definitely can happen.
Jamal, thank you for everything that you do for manatees and for the planet, and to inspire so many people to care.
Thank you for having me and for deciding to share the story.
To learn more about Jamal and to learn about manatees, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We will have links to everything. We are on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. And if you have a spare moment and could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps people find the show. If you'd like to support the podcast, we would greatly appreciate it. You can do so by becoming a member. And you can become a member at speciesunite.com and click Become a Member. I would like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knudsen, Natalie Martin, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, and Anna Kollner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.